Hey guys, my name is Richie Hume from Weapons of Anew, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle Podcast. Rock on.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our today's Boondoggle Radio Show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under Today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at Today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/today's boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at today'sboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well. So please support them and receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time and thanks for listening.
Listen up! Hold on to your seats! Grab your girls! Grab your beers!
What's going on? It's Tommy Beck, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Cato Kalin listens to this all the time.
I am Monty Heath,
someone Heath,
and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Fasten your seatbelt.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle. And real quick housekeeping note, if you are watching us on YouTube or on Rumble or on BitChute, please hit that follow and subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Google and all the podcast platforms we're available on, please hit that follow and subscribe button. Help us build our numbers up so we can continue to bring you conversations like the one I'm about to have right now with Mr. Levi Benton of the band Miss May I. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. Had an awesome day.
Nice, nice. Yeah, as we were talking beforehand, we were going to try and do this while you guys were on tour, but it kind of probably worked out for the best. Wi-Fi is a little bit better from the home base. We can actually get into some things. But
I know I've watched interviews from tour on YouTube, and it's like cutting it out. I'm just like, oh gosh, I'm like, I wish it wasn't like that. So this is nice.
Yeah. So, well, we got some good connection now, so we'll make it happen. So usually when I have people on for the first time, I like to get a quick background. Do you remember originally what you want to be when you grew up?
Oh man, I wanted to be like an architect or like an artist, like an advertising artist, like computer graphics guy.
Nice.
So,
and then when was it, like around what age? And do you remember like the type of music or whatever that kind of influenced you to and pulled you towards a love for music?
Yeah. Yeah. So my mom, and I say this all the time, my mom is way more metal and cooler than I am. So I grew up just as a metalhead. She was, Yeah, she was always listening to metal. I feel like it's with every kid growing up, you don't want to like what your parents like. So it took me a little bit to come around. I used to just be like, why are you wearing black all the time? Why are you wearing skulls? Why are you listening to this stuff? Like, I was trying to do everything not to like metal, just because my mom liked it. It wasn't cool to me because my mom liked it at the time. And then probably like junior high came out. I moved to the town where I met the guys. And first day there, Justin, our guitar player, we like hit it off with our friends. And I think within like the first couple months living in the new town, I played bass. And we were just like, let's just hang. Like, we all skateboarded. And when the lights went out and it was like street lights are on, you can't skate. We like, what are we going to do at night? So we all just played cover songs in like a friend's basement. Horribly cut. Like, well, this is like 13 year olds trying to just play songs. Like, it's just, I can't imagine what it sounded like. Nice. And yeah, but I wasn't really in the metal. I was into like, that was right when MySpace was coming out. So it was like scene music. And then like, I'm trying, like, there was like the Under Oath. I heard screaming, and then that led me to Killswitch. And then I circled back and was like, Mom, I understand what you were listening to this whole time, like in junior high. And then like I started diving deeper, and then she was like, check out Slipknot, check out Testament, check out Cannibal Corpse. And I'm just like, what? Like, I just needed that little bit of like skateboarding, like pop punk, to like one band screaming. And then I just slowly was like, oh, this
nice. Is
this
what was your mom like jamming around the house?
She loves she loves Testament. She loves Megadeth. She loves Cannibal Corpse. Shove's Obituary. She's way cool. She's covered in she's got purple hair, she's covered in tattoos. She's been like that since I was a kid. So
she's a wild child. Yeah. That's awesome, man. I've been getting my girls into metal. They're still into pop and stuff, but they've been going to some shows with me, and you know, we got a few that we bond over and stuff. So
it just takes one band. Right. Once you get the flip, yep. I think our first, it was like a MySpace band, but our first like band together that we like liked was The Used, because they were just enough like skateboardy and light that I liked, but they had some screaming and heavier stuff that my mom liked. And that was our first like, oh, we love this. And then our second love was like Slipknot. That was like when Duality and all that was like, when Slipknot was hitting it big, we went to Ozfest and stuff, and my mom got me VIP ticket. We were losing our minds.
That's awesome, man. Those are memories you'll never forget, dude.
Oh, no, I look at pictures now on the crappy Polaroids, and it's like, we're sweating. It's funny because now I'm doing a million festivals like that. And like, I remember being a VIP with my mom and like seeing the bands. We'd like run after them and they would like run away. It's funny, the tables have turned. And like, when you see the VIP groups walk around backstage, you're like, oh, okay, we got to go this way. We're going to walk this way. And I'm like, it's a funny perspective change. I'll never forget it.
It's got to be really cool for mom now that, I mean, you guys have been kind of hitting it pretty big and doing the festivals and stuff. And now, you know, she gets to go and, you know, be real VIP, part of the you know, crew and everything. Say, look at it, paid off.
She loves it, especially when we play. Like, we're really close friends with the Cannibal guys. Like, our drummer toured with them out in Russia. We're close with a lot of bands that she, like Dave Mustaine, he was really nice to us. My mom loved Megadeth. It's just cool on the other side being like, she's like, oh my God, they're playing. I'm like, you want to go meet them? I'm like, let's go to the green room. I'm like, I'll say what's up. And then she's just freaking out. And I'm like, hey guys, like, this is, so the funny thing, that first band I was saying, The Used, when we did Warped Tour with them, I was losing my mind, because that was the only band I put posters up in my room of. And me and my mom had that bond. And this is like 10 years later, we're doing a tour and Warped Tour, and, we became friends, and he doesn't scream anymore. He's like, hey, do you know this song? Would you want to sing it? And I'm like, do I know this song? I was like, I've been singing this since I was like 12 years old. And I got to play that. And it was just awesome, because then we got real close and I got to really introduce my mom. And I sang that song with them every night on Warped Tour. And it was just crazy full circle moment, because I waited outside in the snow to meet them for hours. And it was just me and my mom left at like this. Well, you know, you're in Ohio. It was Hare Arena. Yeah. It's not here anymore, but in Dayton.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we waited like in the snow to meet them. We were like 3 or 4 hours. It was like sun was coming up, and like the bus was about to leave. And we're like, and I like got pictures with them. And then now we're homies, and I see them every time they're in town. And we're like family friends. So
that is awesome, man. I love when that hearing stories like that.
It's weird.
Yeah. So when, so you guys, you said, you know, you connected with your friends, you guys were skating during the day and then you started playing at night. Now these are all people that you're still playing with today.
Yeah. Everyone. But, everyone but our guitar player. He wasn't like the original. It was before like Miss May. I was Miss May. It was just like how we got together playing music. We didn't have a band name. But a drummer and Justin, our drummer Jared and Justin. Yeah, it was us three are like the OG guys from like, hey, we should do something at night. Like we weren't even, like I said, we were just covers. We weren't even writing music. And then,
and you guys are in Troy, Ohio? Is that where mm-hmm. you're from originally? Or
yeah, two of the guys. Justin and Jared actually still live there. They're still hometown boys. So,
okay, nice. And where are you at now?
I'm in Cincinnati.
Cincinnati? Okay.
I'm Mr. Red Legs.
Okay. But then, like, so what was that like? I mean, when you guys finally like took it to the next level, like, okay, you know, we're not going to do covers anymore. We're going to start playing out. Were you playing like high school things or you started hitting like, just getting yourselves into clubs and playing your own material and putting it together?
Yeah. So like this will just show you how naive and young we were. Was like, I didn't even know there was such thing as a local scene or like local venues. Like that was all foreign to us. Like, until MySpace came out. So, and then like when MySpace was out and we started getting bulletins and you're getting targeted. Well, it's before targeting and ads. Like it's so early, like social media, you just get like a flyer. It's like, hey, there's a show. And then you hear about it when that, cause that was, we started hanging out in junior high. Then we get to high school, hanging out with like older kids. Then they're in like rock bands. And you're like, oh, there's like venues. And so we put together like, just like some original songs, and played our first show. And it was at this like local venue, the only venue that was around. That was like our introduction into like being, and then we loved it. We like, it was like drinking the Kool-Aid. We're like, this is literally, it was just family and girlfriends that showed up. It was like, we have a video of it. It was like 13 people in this like 1200 capacity venue. This is like the front row and they're watching us and we don't know what we're doing. But it was our, just introducing us into that. And then like, so after that came like saving up. Three of us worked at Burger King. We like saved up money to like do our first demos, which, funny how the world turns out, but we hired this guy named Joey Sturgis who became like a world renowned. He's like JST Tones and now he's like done so many platinum albums. And like, but at the time he was renting a garage with a laptop and like getting bands on MySpace. We were all kids and our drummer's grandparents actually took us to record because we didn't have our license. And we tried to record a few songs we spent like that we saved up for. And I remember being in the vocal booth, like my first like take, he's like, we're gonna have to work on something. And like, it just, everything, we just didn't know it was bad and we didn't know what we were doing. We just sort of dug in and I'm still a web developer, but like at that time, I was like just very tech savvy. And like I said, I was always like a computer guy. So when MySpace came out, I was just not doing homework and I was up till like all hours of the night, just obsessed with like what this tool was that became social media. And I just like made our band look cooler, found shows, like posted. And that's really where everything started, was like, we were ahead of the curve because I was just addicted. Nice. Addicted to it. So.
And then when did you guys like start like branching out and playing like outside of your local scene? And I mean, was it because of the name you were building on social media, basically? I mean, pre-social media too? Did it help get you networked and connected with?
Because if you can remember on MySpace, they had this thing, which I miss so much. I wish somebody, I don't even know how it would work now, but they had these like charts and they would have different genre charts down to like the most obscure genre. And then you could literally dial it in down to the city. So you could have like Dayton, Ohio's biggest metal bands, metalcore bands. And then you could do Ohio's and then you could do Cleveland's or Columbus. So like our goal was always to be on the top of all of those. Cause once you were on the like top five, your picture showed up. So it's like, you just work real hard to get those numbers. So once that started happening, we started like meeting other bands and being like, we started doing the show traits. And it's funny because I just actually had, it was last week. He's a crew guy now. He's still in IC Stars, but he's a crew guy now for another band. But he was in town and we were talking about the same thing because my friend Brent, when we were like 14, 15 years old, we're like, they're from Cleveland. And I was just like, they were doing huge shows there. And because of our social following we built on MySpace, our shows were, it's like when, I know this sounds so jaded, but this is like when kids, like when people went outside more, like yeah. They're doing 200 something kids, like at a local show. It was crazy. Like, cause there was nothing else to do. There wasn't, you couldn't sit at home. Online video games weren't a thing. Everybody did stuff. So like even if it was horrible bands, people showed up. But yeah, we just traded with Cleveland bands, traded with Zanesville bands. We pretty much stayed within Ohio because, like, again, we had one guy with a license. So everything had to pack into his car, like all the gear and us. So we're like, and he was the oldest one. He wasn't like in the band when we became what we are now. But he was like a grade above us. And yeah, it's mainly because he had a license. And then when we got BJ, who's the guitar player that's been since the beginning now, he was a grade above us too. So he had his license. So we had two guys with licenses and we're like, oh, we can really. So it was us three that started the band. We had two older guys that wanted to be a part of what we were doing. And so that's how we started trading stuff. And then, yeah.
You'd start networking with other bands in other cities and swapping shows and stuff like that and start building the following there. And I remember, like, you know, back in my day too, because I used to promote shows at like Peabody's and stuff like that.
Pirates Cove. And, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like old school, like, you know, before social media, you'd take the band logos, you'd cut them out, you'd make a flyer, you know, you put the dates on and you go to Kinko's and then you just go all over to like Record Exchange and all over the place and just, you know, put flyers out and it would work and people would still show up because nobody was, you know, staying inside. They all wanted to get out and be a part of something.
Yeah. Every year in high school, literally like freshman, junior, sophomore, I signed up to be the library assistant. And the only reason I wanted that period and that job.
Access to the printer, right?
Was the access to the printer. Yeah. So I had the big printer and like the thing we would always do, just like in the 80s movies, we would like, I'd be like breaking the rules. Like she'd give me some task and I'm like, yeah, sure. And I'm like printing as many as I can, as fast as I can and using the cutters. And I'd make all these flyers and I'd give them all my friends and all day until leading up to the show, we'd just be throwing them in between class changes. And we're just like throwing and like making a mess. And we did that all 4 years of high school.
Dude, and then it's a muscle though, you know,
it is. But it's cool because when we got signed while we were in high school, and once that happened, because Troy is such a small town, it was such a huge thing for the town that we got like worldwide recognition. And all of that, it was just funny because the school was like, what are you doing? What are you doing, you kids? Da, da, da. And then senior year, the school helped sponsor our first hometown show that we put on ourselves. And it was the school, like high school sponsored. And they were like, don't forget, 2 weeks, we got tickets available up at the thing. And they're selling tickets at the lunch. And we sold out this bit, like, because we did this huge show to save up for our first trailer for our first tour that we were going to do right after graduation. And it went from just like being punk ass kids to then the school was like, okay, this is
on board. Is really cool. That's awesome. So I'm always curious about names and how they came to be. But when did you guys come up with like Miss May I? What was the story behind that?
Oh man, I really wish, especially all these years later, I really wish there was a really cool story to it. But honestly, it was just there's no meaning or anything behind it. I remember like the day we came up with it and like where we were. But before that, it was like Day of the Locust. It was like all these random, we were just trying to do obscure things. And the reason was there was a stint of like 6 months where grindcore was just like the biggest thing ever on MySpace and just huge all over the place. And it was so heavy. We're like, that's like, it inspired us even more. So Day of the Locust, like Miss May, like those names came from being obscure names, like grindcore names were. We just wanted to look really crazy on a flyer. We didn't want it to be like the typical metal names. Cause like at the time grindcore bands were like Panda Strike and Your Teeth Are Broken and like Purple Dinosaur. Like there was just these crazy, awesome, heavy grindcore bands that the names were oxymorons. So we sort of jumped on that, and then it just sort of stuck. We weren't a grindcore band. Well, yeah, we weren't a grindcore band. We appreciated it, but we could not play. Those guys were like, we were already trying to go as fast as we could, and those, that was like turning it up to 15, but we appreciated it and fell in love with it. But yeah, so it just stuck, and it really helped because it always off-centered flyers. So we always got really good placement because our name ended with an I, and it was unintentional, but it really did help because like it just made you immediately look at that name on the flyer.
Nice. And then I thought you'd say something like, you know, well, I was asking, you know, permission to use the printer, the librarian, to use the printer. So I'd always say, Miss, may I use
that? I know everyone, I wish there was a cool, our symbol has a bunch of hidden meanings. So like the lion means a lot more to us. The lion has like the number 7 and number 5 hidden all through it. 5 is for those 5 members, and 7 is 2007 is like when we formed.
Oh, nice.
So like, and then, yeah. And then like
in the title, huh?
Yeah. There's like a bunch of cool stuff. But yeah, the actual name itself is just something weird, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. And then, so you guys end up, you know, saving up after that big show, get the trailer and start getting on a tour. And you said you got signed while you were still in high school.
Yeah. So we were a little jaded. We actually didn't play outside of Ohio or tour until we got a deal, because this actually wasn't on our cards. Like, we didn't send press kits, so we didn't we weren't going to be signed. We were just having a good time in high school.
Oh yeah.
And we were like applying for colleges. Like, Jared was going to be a blue coat for drums. Like, we had all this stuff lined up, and then it was like senior year we got the email. Well, what happened was we put up this, so I know it's big now with like Pop Goes Punk and all that stuff, but before that existed, we just put up a cover song of a rap song. Like, this was, and we didn't own it. It was just like screwing around on MySpace. We were like, this sounds heavy. Like, and then we had a friend helping us. Like, we had a friend that was in the Devil Wears Prada, okay, who was huge at the time. They just got signed. They were on the first album. Like, they were our idols. And they were actually, sorry, this will be a quick story, but they were in town, and they heard about us, because then while our plays were going up, we were pretty big for what we were doing. So everywhere we played would like sell out. Like, we would play at this church coffee shop, and then the church was like, listen, you can't even, we sell 200 tickets at the coffee shop. We're going to bring a stage every time you guys come, and we're going to play in the gymnasium and sell 800 tickets. And like, there's like, it's like almost better than tour shows. It was just packed. And we'd have all these bands, and then Prada heard about that and they came. We were freaking out. And then their guitar player, Chris, was like, I want to help you guys. Like, this is, I love what you guys are doing. So we were just broing down. They had Still Fly. And yeah, he was just like, we should do a cover, like something just crazy, and put it on MySpace. And we did the song Swing. We didn't own the rights. We were just, it was actually big on the radio at the time, but we're like, this sort of sounds like a metal song. And we just covered it, made our version of it. And overnight, before like viral was viral, that term, like, oh, like we had like 20 something thousand plays a day, which was still insane. And overnight, it went to like a quarter million. It was 200 something thousand. It was like 10 times. And I remember going to school the next day, and I remember exactly the class. I was in science, and I remember someone looking back and they're like, what are you doing? You're MySpace. Like, you bought one of those bots. You did something. I'm like, I didn't do shit. Like, I don't know what's happening. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, my inbox is full. Like, it just, it's crazy. And that was it. Like, right after that happened, we had like Fearless Records, Sumerian Records, Rise Records, like all these people are just like, hey. And our friends Attack Attack got signed, and Crimson Armada got signed, and there was like a lot of attention on that area, and that was our version to get attention. And we held out on touring until we graduated, because a lot of our friends dropped out of high school to go tour. And we're like I said, it wasn't really in our cards. We're like, I don't know if we really want to do this. So we're like, we're going to finish school. We'll bring it back. And Rise was the only label that was cool. Like, everyone else was like, fine, if you don't want the deal, then screw it. Like, they just wrote us off. And Rise was like, that's cool. Like, how about you finish your album while you're in school, and then we'll release it the summer after you graduate, and you guys can start. And so we spent our whole senior year like recording our first album and setting up our first tour.
Yeah, and that's kind of cool too, that they're like, oh, you guys want to be responsible and actually finish, you know? So if you're going to be responsible with this, that means they could trust you to be responsible with some of the other things that would come along the way. So it should be a no brainer, but I guess the other ones were impatient and they didn't care about
it. Yeah. But because it's like, it's hard not to take that bite. We had that talk so many times. Like, there were so many parent meetings and like us sitting in a circle with all our parents, like, and everyone's just like, what do we do? What do we do? And the parents are like, I don't, cause we weren't old enough to sign our deal. So they had a sign for us. And we're just like, our parents are freaking out. Like, is this legit? Cause at the time it's still MySpace. So we're like, listen, these guys from Portland flew in. They said they're going to change our law. Like, sounded so sketchy for like, now me being a parent, I'm like, it's crazy. And then the internet, like all that was still so fresh and nothing was monetized. So there was no proof of like making money. It was just a whim. You're just like, but listen, mom, like, this number says that many people listen to my song. And she's like, what's an MP3? It's like, it's just all crazy.
But obviously, I mean, you know, being patient and finishing your senior year and then putting the album out, you know, it all ended up paying off in the long run, because then it was like, once that album came out, then it was, you guys were off then, right?
Yeah. And that album, thankfully, like, did so well. Like, to this day, that album is like, it was like I don't know what happened, like the timing or whatever, like, but it was a staple. It's like a staple for metalcore of that year. And it's really cool, because now we do tours as the old guys, and these opening bands are like, I learned guitar on that song. Like, I got to meet Post Malone and hang out with him once. And it was because he loved our first album. He's like, oh, I remember learning Forgive and Forget on guitar. And I'm like, you're Post, what? Yeah, I'm like, awesome. This is crazy. And he's just like, I loved that. Like, it was just such a big time. I'm very thankful that, I don't know what happened, but it worked. That album was crazy. It sucks. Cause like, it doesn't suck. I love all our albums, but that one, I'm just like, there's nothing that'll be like that ride. It was wild.
Yeah, but then so since then, I mean, you guys have, you know, you broke your teeth, transitioning into being a touring band, getting outside of Ohio, and then, you know, festivals. And I mean, how many bands have you had the opportunity to play with that, you know, you never thought you would?
Oh my gosh. It literally, it's almost the opposite list. It's like, who's left that we haven't toured with? Like, the only two that's on my list that we haven't played shows with is like, well, we've played shows with every band on my list, but like I don't know. We've got to do like Slipknot, like festival tour shows. We got to do, it's really, and when you go to Europe, it's everybody. It's like Avenged Sevenfold. Yeah. It's Aerosmith. Like, you're on tour with them for like 40 days on these festival shows, like tours. And you're just like, what? I'm like, peeing in a urinal, and it's like Steven Tyler. You're just, it's just, it's crazy. And you're like, I'm playing at four on the like the heavy stage, like he's headlining, like, but you're a part of this thing. And like Metallica, we did the last set, or I think it was the last Sound Wave. We got to do that, and that was 12 days, and it was like Linkin Park, Metallica, Paramore, Blink-182, like insane headliners, and then we're all traveling together on these planes, and you're just like sitting on this plane, and you see like freaking James Hetfield, and they're just like throwing you the horns, and you're just like, if I would have ever have thought, like, and we
Troy,
just were riding
high school or whatever, you know.
It's my bucket list was having road cases. Like, I just wanted a road case, and ever since then I'm just like, I'm just gonna ride this out. Like, it's just, and I think that's why we still do it, is we're just really thankful, because it wasn't supposed to, not that it shouldn't have been like this, but it wasn't like, yeah, it's just, it's all just been a very like happy ride.
And now you guys, you know, you just put out your seventh studio album.
Yeah.
And Curse of Existence. I wanted to ask, you know, I was reading about that and I wanted to get into that a little bit. Like, well, the meaning behind that, that title.
Yeah.
What inspired that for you?
Yeah. So, we were at the end of an album cycle going into that. So from Shadows Inside to Curse of Existence was like 5 years. So it was a long long time. Because before that, we were doing every 2 years we had an album. And yeah, so obviously a lot of it had to do with the pandemic, but before that we were going through just weird times, because a lot of stuff was changing. Like, I moved to California, like Ryan and his girlfriend broke up of like 7 years. I was about to have a kid. Like, all this happened before the pandemic, and then pandemic starts, and then Justin has a kid. All of these were like planned, but it's just like life is changing so much. And I think what really hit us was like, we never really had to like grow up or like deal with real life until the pandemic. Cause we've been riding this for like a decade plus. It was just like tour, album, tour, award show, blah, blah, blah. It's all these like butterflies and rainbows. And then the world stops and you're like, oh my God. And then it keeps stopping, and then shows are gone. And then revenue stop, and you're just like, oh, and then like kids on the way, like it's all this stuff. And it was just like, it made us like grow up like overnight. Not that we were immature, but just like really like life just hit us like a freight train, because everything we built just was taken from us. And yeah, so after that happened, then the studio got pushed back again. So we're like, are we even going to be able to do an album? Like, are people going to still listen to us? So like, we had all these thoughts. And yeah, we go into the studio and we start writing, because we don't really write lyrics until we're in the studio. And we're like reflecting on everything. And all the songs sort of had like a topic of like, of just these like trials and like just crap we were all dealing with stuff. Everyone was in their own unique dark place, and we were all like working on it together. Like, BJ still hasn't played a show with us since. Like, he's not recovered yet. Like, we've had fill-ins. Like, we just did two tours, and BJ like hasn't left his house and recovered. Like, he's just in a weird mental spot. I was like in the darkest place I've ever been.
I read some of that, and you know, I was wondering if you're cool opening up and talking about that. You know, some of the, cause I mean, most of America was, you know, in the same space, especially our youth, you know, and, just the mental health struggles and the isolation that we were forced into and stuff. And like, kind of how did, I mean, you were very vulnerable with this album, you know, sharing a lot of what you were feeling and going through and stuff, which I believe definitely will, you know, be a benefit to help others.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
That listen to it and stuff. But like, talk about that, you know, being able to, was that like therapy for you to be able to get a lot of that out or speak it, you know?
It really was. And it's sort of like, ever since then, ever since writing it and putting on this album, I've like had no filter. I'm like, that was the hardest thing I've had to like puke out and say. So ever since then, I'm like, I'll just say anything now. Cause like, yeah, it was, I think it's with the isolation and self-reflecting, especially just being on the high of being in the band and that taken away. Like, I feel like a lot of band guys, like tour nonstop and do, it's like such an adrenaline rush. It could be in the perspective of like, you're trying to escape something. That's why you're doing this so much, you know, like that's why you do the band. That's why you do this, because you're trying to escape real life shit. And then real life shit just hit everybody at one point. I just watched an interview with Trevor from, it was his last interview he did from Black Dahlia, and it just sounded like we were in the same head spot. Like, and he was dealing with a hard time, like, because he was like, he's been doing it longer than I have, and he's like, I never had to deal with stuff until now. It's just me and my thoughts, and he's like, it's horrible. And that's what I was dealing with. And I just like, what put the cherry on top of my situation was like, I just moved from California back to the Midwest. And I was working on this house, or working on like where we live now, like this remodel, and like all my funds and my friends and everything. Like, so I already lost my friends, cause I'm like, I'm going to do this new thing, and all my funds leave, cause it like touring and music just stops. And then, so I'm not seeing my friends anymore. And then it's like, I ripped the roof off this place. It's freezing. It's like the cold Midwest. And I like don't even know how I'm gonna afford to finish it. Like, I had just all this, and then like my wife's 8 months pregnant. Like, I'm just like, and shows and tours just keep getting canceled. I'm just like, what is that? You just start, it was just horrible. Well, you and brought that was up just that was just my narrative. Like, yeah, everyone has their own narrative. It's crazy.
Yeah, and you brought up a, you know, a good point too. Is like, you know, I mean, the touring, the constant touring, and playing out and writing albums is like, you know, you're avoiding, you know, any uncomfortableness or whatever that you might have to deal with. You know, like, I mean, I'm in recovery, and I know my avoidance was drinking drugs. I'd have to numb because I didn't want to deal with feeling and, you know, any uncomfortableness and stuff. And I've been learning now through sobriety how to, you know, try and deal with life on life's terms and stuff, as they say. But, you know, I could see how I've got 13 years now, so it's like I've got some tools in my tool belt. But when I had to finally, like, that first year of having to start dealing with stuff, those first couple of years were tough. So I can't imagine, like, that was almost something similar you guys may have been going through. Like, I have to deal with life on life's terms. It's not all on a tour bus and being a rock star.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it was. And like, and that's what all our friends, like, there's a lot of artists that we lost during that too. Like, it was crazy. Yeah, I think that was one thing we could all relate. And I didn't see it as like a positive light until doing the album, because I couldn't even focus on doing the album. It was like, and honestly, I love this album, but it was like my least favorite to write, because like, that's the last thing I wanted to do was go into the studio. I didn't want to do anything. Which I know a lot of people felt that way, but so when I went in, the lyrics, the tone, it was just so negative and so like, it was just so shitty, because I just couldn't see and we've always been like a positive band, and it was really cool because the producer Will, it was our first time working with him, but he like read the lyrics and we showed him some of the songs. He's like, this is not you guys. Like, it was the first time too. Someone's like, this isn't you. Like, you need to go back and redo this. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you need to write it. Like, change your perspective. Like, you're here now. You're not in that spot. Da, da. And that was when like the therapy for me started, because I was like, oh, like maybe I need to look at it in a different perspective. Like, my perspective didn't change until he said that.
So it helps to have a different set of eyes sometimes. Cause like you were mentioning earlier, being stuck in our own heads. You know, we don't always have the best advice for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know.
And then I'm with the other band guy. Yeah. Well, the rest of the guys are feeling the same thing. So I'm showing them lyrics. I'm like, yeah, dude, fuck that. Like, they're like, they feel the same way. So everyone was, it was just this cycle. It's just like, yeah.
But I mean, now you guys have been able to, you know, put this out. What's the feedback been like from your fan base? You know, do you feel like a lot of people were like, man, this is really helping me, and this is something I could totally relate to? Has it been pretty positive?
Oh, yeah. It's really cool, because not only is it, therapeutic for us and some fans, but there's also like some, our fans have always grown up with us. We were always like the same age as our fans. And there's a lot of songs on here and a lot of tones about being like a parent and like having that perspective. And that's been another really cool thing, because those are what other fans, like what people can relate with now. And when they come to these shows, they're like it just hits them in such a different way, which was the point. But it's cool to see other parents or people that have lost kids or want to have kids, like just that entire perspective, because that's something we've never wrote about. And then it's hard to not write about it when you become a father. You're like, like, you're just thinking about your kids the whole time. You're like, oh, I need to write a song about this, but like, can't get them out of your head. And it's cool. The response has been great. It was really fun to record, because we've been doing it for so long. Not that we're like burnt out, but we're just like, we're sort of over the rinse and repeat of like, write this kind of song, do this kind of festival, do this radio show, do that. And like, it is fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, that stuff's awesome. Yeah. But like, there's a lot of stuff we never got to really do. And we're like, if we're going to do this, like, we're at the end of this current contract. Like, we'll sign another deal and do like more stuff. But like,
hey, baby, this is Double D, also known as Dream Daddy. And I got to tell y'all something about our new sponsorship here at today's Boondoggle.
and the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well, then you come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, proteins, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's BOONDOG10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount/boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled D-R-E-E-M. And start saving today because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your friends from today's Boondog sent you.
We're like, if we don't want to do this, like, let's just really just do what we want to do this time around. And like from now on, because we have like the commercial songs, like if people want that, it's cool. So like we really let some of our old, like deep influences shine. And it was so fun. And that's like, and the coolest thing was that's what the fans are liking the most. They're like, oh, I love how you did that. I love how you did that. I'm like, oh shit. I thought you guys would hate this. I was like, now that you love this, wait till the next album. Like if we can lean into that, then we have 20 more years left in a band. So so hearing that they like that, it was nice because it's a lot easier being yourself than it is to try to like sell albums.
Yeah. And how did this last tour like feel? I mean, or the first getting to, you know, tour, getting to play out after the uncertainty, you know, how different did this feel than your very first one after leaving high school?
Oh man. Well, our first one back was actually our longest tour ever too. It was with All That Remains. It was 52 shows, 70 days, really long. We played every market, A, B, C, and D, like every city you could think of. It was long, long. And, it was cool. It honestly, like after going through that, I could relate with fans and stuff in a whole new level, which maybe was like more of a real level because, like I said, it was always butterflies and rainbows for us. So when I got these letters of like how these fans were going through depression or anxiety and stuff, like not that I brushed it off, but I never could really relate. I'm just like, oh, I'm happy that song helped you. I'm happy. And now I've went like, that's what I was thinking about was all the stories I've heard over the years. Like when I was in the dumps, I'm like, this is what everyone was fucking talking about. Like this whole time, like I'm feeling this now. So I could going back now, I could just see it in people's eyes and like see how they're like letting go or like talk to them after the shows for a long time and just hear their stories. Now I can relate in a whole nother level. Cause I'm like, oh dude, I'm right there with you, man. Like let's get through this. And then the other side of it was like sensory overload. Like I used to be such a social, not that I'm not social now, but I used to be way more social and outgoing. And I had definitely had like a shell for like the first, like, 3 or 4 weeks on the tour. Like I remember going out in the first show, it was like All That Remains sold out the Palladium at Worcester, and it was a fucking huge show. It was the first one back, and I just remember being like, I was having a good time, we were playing good, but inside I'm just like, there's so much happening right now. I was like, this is great. Like it was just the lights and the crowd. Like I was just, it was just like it was just like a deer in the headlights. Like I watched the videos and you couldn't tell, but internally like I was freaking out. I was just like, this is, it went from like quiet at home, just trying to figure life out to like, and then the crazy thing was everyone acted like it was nothing. It's all the same crew guys, all the same venue guys. Everyone's like, hey, good seeing you, man. And I'm just like,
it's like no riding a bike.
No one's going to bring up that we were like, we all were just home for 2 years. Like nobody brought it up. It was like the unwritten thing that you don't talk about. And it was,
He that shall not be named. Yeah.
Exactly. And it was weird. And like, so that part was weird. Not that I ever want to talk about like the like lockdown and stuff, but, it definitely is like a mind fuck to just be like, okay, we're just going to turn the lights on and do it. Do yeah, it. Like act like nothing happened.
We got the door's open. Let's run with it, man.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about a different subject too, that I read about you guys, that, you know, some of the members of your bands are Christians. I myself am a Christian also. And I've noticed, I've gotten, I don't know how it, I mean, it sounded like you guys had a ton of support growing up in the family, being able to, you know, get out and do this. But I've run into some, you know, in my own community, you know, in my own church group sometimes, because I still listen to, you know, secular music. I go out and I'm a big metal fan. I go out and I go to shows and stuff. Did you guys ever run into any kind of, you know, like resistance from, you know, fellow Christians or whatever?
No, not really. So our story is a little weird because we really get coined a Christian band from our first like few songs we were ever released, and that we were side by side with the Devil Wears Prada. I was really the only Christian in the band, but I was like leader of the lyrics and leader of the band. So like, I feel like the other guys weren't. So it was really, it was really like an unsaid thing. The only thing that was weird was when we got like heavier and like, just like into different like cliques and communities, that was just weird, because it would come up like, but didn't you write that one song? Didn't you do this? Didn't you do that? And you're like, yeah, but it's just like you like grow with things. So that was the only weird thing. It was like to just deal with that, because once you write something, it's there forever. Like once you release that song, like it's like it's a bookmark. So we had and then I would have the guys like giving me crap. Not that they're like against anything. It was just like they're like, we don't. So that message was like, yeah, it was never a main message. It was weird. We never, if anything, the Christian community really helped us, because at that time there was a huge explosion of Christian metalcore bands. So me being a Christian and being like the voice helped sort of get us into those like those shows in that world as well, like during that spike, because I was always the one doing the promotions and like doing the talking. So it's like if the other guys were, who knows what they would have said. Not that it would have been disrespectful, but it was easier for me to be like, oh yeah, like my guys will be good, like this is what I do, we're a bunch of good Ohio boys, like and like I just had to keep everything under wraps. But I think just with that mentality, I think it bled into our music, not verbatim, but more of just the energy that we like put on. Because I think now hindsight, all the years and music we've released as a band, it's cool, because it's all just it really is just supposed to be like a pick me up, energized, inspirational kind of music. We just package it in a metal band. So it's like, it's just packaged differently. Like we have the skulls, the big middle finger, the songs, like all these like parts, but there's always a resolution. Like there's not one Miss May song doesn't have a resolution. And that's what like Will was saying too. He's like, that's not you guys. Like you guys are, people put you on to have this kind of feeling, like, goes back. And that helped, because the first time in 7 albums we came in with a negative album and we're like, fuck this, fuck that, everybody's like, we're just so upset. So
I mean the only reason why I ask is just because, like I said, it's some of the stuff that, you know, it's like, you know, it's a personal relationship that we have, you know. And a lot of other people, sometimes it feels like they want to make your personal relationship about their personal relationship, you know, and we're not here to be perfect. You know, we do the best we can. And, you know, I saw how, like, you know, the community treated like Brian Welch from Korn when, you know, he left Korn and he's a part of us. But then when he decided to go back, a lot of them like turned around and crapped all over him. And it's just like, you know, I mean, you guys aren't going to go to these places and try and reach people, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's not like being preachy or anything like that. It's just, this is my beliefs, and it usually shows in how I walk and how I treat others.
Yeah, for sure. And
I think that's the important thing. It's not about beating people up with it. And like, you know, I don't know, you know, it's just like how you can treat others and where, I mean, you know, if you look back at the main guy in the Bible, Jesus was hanging out with a lot of, you know, people that, you know, the legalists wouldn't, you know? So, yeah. But, I just wanted to, you know, I had read that and it was something that I'd been dealing with. So I wasn't sure. I wanted to see what your guys's, flack has been, but it sounds like you've had a positive support system.
Yeah. Yeah. The only first big thing was, yeah, like when our first album, we dropped like an F bomb and it was like, right with like, say your fucking prayers. Like that was the lyric. And that was our first big flack. Cause like we grew up playing, like, it wasn't even that we were negative guys. It was the right lyric for that part. Like in context, it was what needed to be said in the song. And like, we grew up in like playing, like I said, we played that coffee shop at church. Like in Ohio, you grow up playing like church halls. Like that's just where the venues are. Like,
yeah.
And at that time, that's how it was. Yeah. That's how it was. So like, we definitely got flack when that happened, but ever since then, it's been great. And I actually meet a lot of really cool Christians and positive people that you would never think in other bands. You're just like, or like people that just want to have those conversations. You're like, wow, I would never have thought you wear corpse paint on stage. Who would have thought?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, since I've been in recovery too, I've gotten to know, you know, and I do a lot of recovery with a lot of, you know, because of, I've been blessed with this opportunity to talk to a lot of people in the music world and network and form relationships. And they invite me into some of their recovery groups. And it's like some of the guys who never thought, you know, we're Christians, yeah, are Christians. And it's like, because, you know, it's, I don't think it's like a one size fits all, you know, you can't box, you shouldn't box it, put it in a box. And a lot of people seem like they want to put it in a box, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, what? Let it, I don't know. Like I said, you know, people by their heart and how they treat others, you know, it's not about preaching. It's about how you make other people feel. And, you know, I always try and be positive and treat others how I want to be treated, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And, so the album's been doing pretty well. You guys, already working on the next one or have, you know, what's the goals coming up for Miss May I?
So we have some ideas for like a re-release that we really want to work on. We have songs we actually wrote for like a re-release or some cool things. We have this yearly show called Relentless Eve that we're actually changing and branding to something bigger that isn't announced yet, which we're really excited for. And yeah, we're going to pick back up on touring and being more active. We're supposed to be in Europe right now. Like I should be on this call in Europe, but we had to cancel that tour. So like we still have a very busy schedule of touring, but we are taking personal time off until next fall because I got baby two coming on the way. And then our drummer
congratulations,
has,
man.
Thank you. Yeah. And our drummer has his first little one coming. So we are actually like a dad band. We are the most dads per capita of a band I know.
That's awesome.
So three of us are dads out of five. And we love it. Yeah. Like we have.
Yeah. It's a life changer, man. I got two daughters and, you know, I used to run hard with the, as a promoter here in Cleveland and, you know, running with the bands and hanging out backstage. And, you know, that's where a lot of my problems happened with my mm-hmm. addictions and stuff. It was like an open door. And then I had my girls and, you know, life had to change, man. And it just, you know, I hit a place where it's just like, I needed to change. And thankfully it happened, you know, after my last deployment and I came home and I've been sober 13 years now. And my daughters love hanging out with me. I just took them to see Five Finger down in Columbus.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, I mean, I'm friends with Chris from the band, you know, and it's just like we get to do these things together now, you know, and they're all grown up. But I look back at the early days and I was still kind of in my addiction, and I got sober when my youngest turned five and my oldest was eight. So that was still young enough for me to kind of rewrite and erase some of the bad memories of their youth of me.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's days I beat myself up wishing I would have been fully there, you know, for the ages that you guys are experiencing now, man. So enjoy it. You know,
thank you, man. Yeah. Yeah. We brought like brought my daughter Jax on tour. She did like 4 weeks of the All Our Mains tour. She did 3 weeks of our headliner, like, where, so that was like the only thing I was being a diva about, but I was like, the family's coming with us. Like, but it was like changing the mold. And the cool thing was, like, All That Remains and these bands that have been doing it longer than we have were like, who have kids at home, like, wow, I've never thought like I could bring our kids out on tour. And I was like, we'll make it work. Like, we'll figure it out. And like, that's what we've done. Like, I sleep on the couch when they're out and they take my bunk, and we have a baby gate by the stairs on the bus, and like, just change things up. And then,
that's awesome, just, man.
It's cool. Yeah. And like, when I go to these venues that I've played 100 times, now I'm like, where's the closest child museum, or where's the closest park? Like, I enjoy it in a whole new way. And I'm in bed by 11 and I'm like, I gotta get up at 7 because we're gonna get breakfast. Like, I just, it's a whole new appreciation for touring and traveling. Than it used to be, like me being jaded, like, it's raining, I hate this venue, God. And like, I used to just be, and I look back at those times, I'm just so happy, like, yeah, that's changing now. I'm actually on my sober journey at the moment. I'm like 40 days in, but after this last tour, I was like,
awesome, man. Congratulations. No,
thank you. I had a little different, but I had like my first hardcore one. Like, I guess this is transparent, I've never really said an interview, but like, heavy psychedelic trip on this last tour. And it was so like amazing and like eye-opening that I was just like, I just dealt with a lot of stuff during it. And I was like, I don't think I need to do, I know what I need to do. And it was just, it was so easy. Like, the next day I was just like, done.
Nice.
And it's
nice.
Just been, I never looking back. And I feel it's been the best detox. And like, life has exponentially changed since. And I'm just like, this is what I want to go towards. So,
dude, it's awesome. Beautiful, man. And there's a huge support system in the music world, man, for touring musicians that I've had the pleasure of, you know, getting to meet and be a part of. And now it's like, you know, when these guys come through the area, they're like, Bill, come on down and hang out. And it's just like, I don't have to worry about no shenanigans. I'm being invited. You know, before it was, people didn't want me backstage because I drink half their rider. And now it's like, come on and hang out. We're going to just, you know, be like real dudes talking about real life and you know, having a good time, you know? So if you are interested in connecting with any of that, man, you can hit me offline or whatever and get you connected.
Yeah, I'd love that. That'd be awesome.
And then, so I know we went a little bit over the time that you gave me. I apologize for that. Hopefully you've been having a good chat here. But before we get ready and wrap up, you mind answering some of the questions I normally ask?
Yeah, for sure.
So who are your top three musical artists?
Oh, man. For like inspiration stuff, I would say like In Flames, Darkest Hour, and As Lay Dying. Those would be my top three.
Nice. And you know, the like what you were talking about earlier with like you know, how inspirational this album could, you know, writing these lyrics through this dark time to help, you know, being vulnerable and helping other people out. Is there a particular song that you've listened to that's helped you during similar times out there?
You know, like I needed to, like, I actually went back through music and like listened to songs. Actually, I gotta find the title of it. A lot of Linkin Park songs, actually, which I used to think were just so commercial and like radio, but like towards like when he was in a really dark time, those kind of songs. Yeah, the album Living Things really messed me up. Yeah, I'll Be Gone on Living Things. That one, that song's just like, it's just weird. Like, and I did my research to sort of research those kind of songs, to just like hear a different perspective. And yeah, it was crazy. I actually remember listening to that album when all that happened that day and had like a meltdown. I was on a run. I was like, but yeah, that was, I think that album, Living Things by Linkin Park, was just really heavy for me.
Gotcha. And, you know, we got to talk about you know, your guys' senior year of high school before getting out, hitting the road and everything. And you got, you know, you got a second, you got a little one now and a second one on the way that's going to be going through schools. What class do you feel should be mandatory before graduating high school today?
Oh, man. I think like an instrumental class would be cool because like I moved around a lot as a kid and it was always hit or miss. Like some schools had orchestra, some kids didn't have orchestra, some had band, some didn't have band. And it messed me up. And that's why I didn't like stick with an instrument like that. So not just music class, but like an instrumental. Yeah, I think like schools just need like a class to just teach music instruments. Like, and like I want to get my daughter into that School of Rock program because like the early years, every week they get to pick just an instrument to screw around with until they like really connect with one. And just that, I wish I had that in like junior high and stuff just to like see if you're into it. Cause like, I feel like there's something for everybody, but you just have to really like be hands on and play with it. Like not be like, this is the recording. This is the recorder for a whole year. This is like, this is what you have to do. It's like,
you can earn a different colored string if you can.
Yeah. Like maybe you're a piano guy. Maybe. Yeah. For real, like, and everyone just picking their own thing. I think that would be, that'd be really cool. Cause I, it's really magical. That's like our other message is just like our big message as a band. And I think it's just because of our upbringing is like, and it sounds so cliche and cheesy, but I really believe it. It's just like, it's like you have to believe in yourself before you can like do that kind of stuff. And I think like music and being vulnerable and like expressing yourself that way is all just peeling layers off the onion, which like 99% of people I meet have so many layers. And I'm just like, if you would just let go, I'm like, there's probably so many just amazing artists and amazing stories and just intellectuals out there, but like they're so afraid and they just don't let go. And like, and obviously I had a different, I think because of our different like upbringing, I could like say it in a different way, but I just, it is so true because everyone I've met on tour, it's because they've ripped off you rip off those layers and it's those kind of people. And it's like, and I see so many amazing people that don't see it in themselves. I'm just like, if you just relax and like just believe in yourself and let it loose, like you could do so many amazing things. And there's not just one thing to do. That's the other thing is like, like life is really limitless. You just have to believe.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I mean, I'm approaching 50 here and it's like, I'm still learning to peel away layers, you know, just to keep, I try and be a better person today than I was yesterday, every day, especially, you know, even though my daughters are growing up now, it's like, I don't stop trying to be better for them and the people around me, you know, it'll be, I'll keep doing it. And as long as I'm on this side of the ground, you know?
Yeah.
And then who are three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today?
That's a heavy one. Three is a lot too. I'm like a very, I look at this Snoop Dogg video all the time because that's a hard question. I've been asked that. I've always been like a solo guy. There's this video, there's this Snoop Dogg video. What I was saying was he's like, and I want to thank myself for doing it. Like, I don't, cause I didn't really, I had like not a lot of family growing up and everything. I would thank my mom for she has no layers of onions. She is the most crazy outgoing person, but I appreciate it. The older I get, the more I appreciate that. So definitely my mom inspired me to just really be myself. My wife, she's my high school sweetheart. We've been together since I was 14, since before the band. Wow. So she got to see everything like at my side.
It's awesome.
And she thought I was cool before anyone thought I was cool. And I always, I always remember that. Cause I think she'd still be here without all the bells and whistles. We just had a good time riding it out. And then, oh man, another person inspired me. See, it's hard because like I said, I'm such a lone wolf. This is a good question. I needed this self-reflection. I guess would be like my grandpa. He's not around anymore, but my grandpa, because he was just so soft-spoken and incredibly kind, even through like he was like a beagle. Like, you could be so mean to him and he's still like the sweetest guy. And I think that really rubbed off a lot on me, because like my grandma is not the nicest person, and he was still like, he just let it roll off his shoulders and was so soft spoken, never raised his voice. Like, he was very chill. So I think my grandpa.
That's awesome, man. And then, are there any causes or organizations that you support and encourage others to check out?
It's funny. I just said, I really don't have a lot of, I'm very like, I don't know. One I do support that I think is really cool, and they actually approached me. I just think it's pretty crazy. And it's funny. I just said Beagle, but when I had a Beagle, there's this project called Beagle Freedom. They actually approached us, to do some promotions with them. And it's really incredible, because, I am vegan. I've been vegan for like 12 years. I'm not as much for the animals as just like health and, like science of veganism. The animals love is like a cherry on top, but with Beagle Freedom, it's crazy. Cause, yeah, in America, they still test like tobacco use and alcohol and vaping like on everyday beagles. And I got to meet some of these beagles that have never been outside. I got to be the person to put them on grass for the first time, and they were like 6 or 7 years old. They were just pumped full of smoke their whole lives, and they're like they're all tattooed up, and they kill something. It's like, and this was like 6 years ago, so it could be more now, but at the time they were killing like, and they do it in colleges, like they do it all over the place, like right under our nose. You would never know, but like they kill like 60,000 beagles like a year, testing on them. And it's just because they're so timid and sweet. Like, they're one of the only breeds that like I said, you can beat them, do horrible things, and
I thought I read something too, like when all this stuff was coming out, like about, you know, Dr. Fauci and stuff. Yep. Like he did horrible things to beagles too. And it was just like, man, another reason why I can't stand that dude.
Yeah. And that was 6 years. That was before the Fauci stuff. Like, they came to me and they're like, you have a beagle, would you love to see our program? And I was like doing it with them. I was just like, this is insane. Like, on Americans, like here, I'm like, it's like you're reading this stuff and you're like, at Phoenix University, at New York, like New York City, like you're reading these places that you go to all the time and you're like, they're doing what? Are you serious? Like, and it's because they're not violent. It's like, it's not like a rat or like a mouse. Like, a mouse will bite you back. Like a beagle, you can like cut him open and he'll just cuddle you afterwards. It's like, it's the sad, it's horrible.
Yeah, I wasn't even aware it was that bad, man. So I'm glad you brought it up. Raise awareness for people.
It was It was also the most heartwarming thing. And one of the coolest things I got to do was to like take those beagles and put them on grass, like let them be outside for the first time in their lives. Like, talk about your heart melting into a million pieces. It was the coolest.
Gotcha.
So you could save them too. So if anybody's wants a beagle, is interested, when they get a lab shut down, they, Beagle Freedom takes all the beagles and you can adopt them. They're tattooed and they've had a rough life, but you can give them a home. Miley Cyrus is like a big supporter. She has like 3 beagles and they're all from Beagle Freedom. So
they still love you.
Yeah, they still love you, even though you,
I want a tattoo, dog. That'd be kind of cool. I got some ink. We can, you know.
They're under their ears. They have all these IDs and barcodes and brands under their ears so they can scan them in.
Wow. Crazy. Yeah. And then on a more cheerier note, favorite toy as a child.
Oh man. I had that cartoon Gargoyles. I had this gargoyle toy of Goliath, who was the main gargoyle. And I had all of them, but this one was the coolest. Like, and you could put the stone on him and he could hit this button in the back and he'd break out of the stone and the piece would come off. And I just remember like I'd carry all the pieces around everywhere with me all the time. And I would just pop them on and break them out of that. And then the green Power Rangers flute, like that got the guys out of the water. Cause I just remember that was such a sought after toy. And my mom went like states and states and states away back in the day to get that for me for Christmas, because it was sold out like everywhere. Like, she came home at like the 12th hour, like, I got it. I just remember how cool that toy was, and nobody had it.
Your mom sounds like the raddest, man. I hope I get a chance to meet her someday.
She's the coolest. She's usually you're Ohio, so she's at every Ohio show we've ever played. So she's
nice. So was she at Beachland when you guys played there?
No, my little brothers were. She didn't make it out there. My little bros did though.
Okay.
But they don't have a green room, so thankfully we didn't have a lot of people. It was packed.
Yeah, I wasn't able to make that one, but hopefully I'll make another one. Are you guys you probably can't announce anything if you are, but I know there's, you know, they're already announcing, you know, some of the festivals coming up here this season.
I can't say.
All right.
I can't say, but we're, like I said, we are working on
there's two major Ohio ones that I'm always at. So hopefully you guys are on one of those. So
yeah. Yeah.
And one of them's just making a return, for Memorial Day weekend. So I'm excited about that.
It's going to be awesome.
But, and then any message you have for our military members currently serving overseas?
Yeah, just a thank you. I say it every day on tour, anytime we see anyone from the service. And just thank you. That's like it's such a big sacrifice. And we always compare it to touring because, like, we can complain about being on tour and being gone for 30 days or being through these elements 30 days, and we're like, but you know who doesn't complain? And we're like, you know, like imagine, and it's voluntary. It's like, it's incredible what you guys do. So I appreciate it. And you got bigger kahunas than all of us. So that's what we always joke about too. So.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Hey, it's been really, thank you for being generous with your time tonight. It's been great talking with you and getting to know more about you and everything and the band. If there's anybody out there that may not, you know, maybe new to hearing about you in the audience and wants to know more and support you guys, where would you send them?
MissMayIMusic.com.
Okay, great. And they can find everything off of there.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Man, thanks so much for your time. Real quick before I let you go, you mind doing me one last favor?
Yeah, yeah. What's up?
You mind cutting a promo ID for the show? Just introduce yourself and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Yep, yep. What's up? It's Levi from Miss May I and you're listening to today's Boondoggle.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate the time and it's good talking with you. And we'll hopefully catch you in the next run.
Sounds great, man.
And congratulations once again on kid number two.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Take care.
Have a good night. See you, brother.
Isolate, isolate, don't sleep.
brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Another one come to mind.
They put the guy from
YouTube.
The hell was that?
Sand crab.
Taking bribes.
I got a cheese meeting
with the underwear.
That was in Spain.
In Spain.
Gary Luster.
They had this bank of toilet.
He got caught.
That we were pooping and peeing
money
and
bribes.
Outhouses. Yeah.
And every one of them was just all the time. Overflowing. Just absolutely overflowing.
That's how them guys got into your shop.
I took like the second one, and I locked it.
And you told me that
it goes right to my thighs.
Get them guys. I don't know what they were doing.
Who else wants some? Raise your hands, because I got one, two, three, four more. Thank you.
So we took the one and we locked it, so it was always locked. Every time someone come up there, it's like, it's locked. So now this one was clean, nice, and it was ours.
ours.
So, you know, we just take your knife, unlock it, go in, boom, lock it when you're done. So we're coming back from this night of drunken frivolities. And so I'm in there and I'm peeing and it's dark out. And I see him stumbling through the sand to go to the bathroom. So I see him and I'm like, this is going to be funny. So I lock the door. And I get that's right I up against the door.
Not my problem.
And he pulls out his knife and he starts fumbling with the lack. And he undoes it.
As long as they don't take away
opens up the door and he goes a step in and we are face to face. And I'm like, blah!
I'm like, oh, I gotta piss no more. I just piss myself. And
I thought he was gonna drop dead, man.
Remember that.
All right.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into Today's Boondoggle.